Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Welcome to La Liga Weekly, where it was all change at the top again. Real Madrid lost away at Osasuna, partly thanks to a much-disputed penalty. Barca's president, Joan Laporta, said Madrid deserve it because of, well, you know, history. I'm sorry to be picky, but I don't think we can work that into the organisation of a football competition. I mean, how would it work? Are we giving all 462 penalties to Getafe next week or spreading them out over the course of the season? Maybe Theo Walcott was right and they would finish eighth in the Premier League if they have to repay every dodgy refereeing decision ever made. I always thought he was a brilliant pundit and worth every penny. What we've seen this weekend is the long-awaited clampdown on defending. Those people have been ruining football for too long. VAR's already successfully stopped defenders from booting the ball out of the box and now moved on to stopping them making any sort of movement in the penalty area because what a great development this is. If an attacker runs into the defender or the goalkeeper and then falls over, it's a penalty. Good. Hopefully by 2029 we can do away with goals in open play and just have a penalty shootout every week. Of course, I'm exaggerating. Barca didn't need penalties to beat a Levante side that showed 15 changes from their previous game. Pedri's back and even Frankie de Jong scored an actual goal. Refreshingly for the oldies, we saw that crossing and getting players into the box can still work. Santi Cazorla to Eric Bailly sounds like a recreation of a goal from about 15 years ago, but apparently they'd never played together before this season. Oviedo continue to taunt their home supporters. If you combine their match at Real Sociedad on Saturday and their game at Girona earlier in the season, that's more goals than in their 12 home matches this season. The numbers on the Real Madrid penalty situation, this is AI for you. I couldn't be bothered to look it up, so I AI'd it because I don't need to know. If you actually need to know the answer, don't use AI. Because the first answer it gave me was 462 penalties in the league. And then I did it again, and it said 552. So I don't know where it found another 90. And apparently they've had 40. If you do the net penalties, they've had 43 more than Barca over the years. I don't think you can just go back and say, oh well, they deserve it. I'm not sure that's a reasonable argument. We're going to talk penalties, Terry, because I think one of them I would give of this weekend penalties. It's just honestly the footprint of VAR sits so heavily now on every football match that it's frustrating. Some of them are awful. Should we do the Real Madrid one first? Because it was hugely important in the game, wasn't it? We said, you know, it's a difficult game. If they come out of this weekend, top of the league, it'll be a great weekend for Real Madrid. They haven't. They were beaten Osasuna. Plenty of things to talk about how they're playing and how Osasuna play, etc. But can we just do the pen? You think there was something, you thought there was a case for it. I don't. I basically think that... So what it is, Budimir is running towards the penalty area. Asensio's there in front of him. He sort of nicks the ball away. Courtois comes, he's running out at the same time, three people converging. There's contact, there's clear contact between Budimir and Courtois, and they give that as a penalty. My point is, Budimir never had possession of the football, so he is just running into the penalty area. It's as much him running into Courtois as it is Courtois running into him. But in terms of consistency, yes, they are doing this all the time now.
Yeah, that's where we disagree. You're applying common sense. I apply the narrative of we see that given.
Yeah, and we do in other games.
If you asked me 5 years ago, do I think it's a penalty? No, I don't. But now, as soon as it happens, you're thinking, initially you see the collision and you think, yeah, I don't see an obvious penalty there. Then when you see the steals and you see it frame by frame, you're thinking, that's going to be given. And if it's not given, other players, other clubs, other teams are going to moan that theirs wasn't given. And I knew it was going to be given.
Yeah, and the other thing that they do that everyone is against, and they still do it, is start off with a freeze frame.
Exactly, where his foot is on...
The goalkeeper's hand is touching his foot, isn't it? And you think, oh, look.
His boot.
Yeah, yeah.
And as soon as you see that, you're thinking, well, we know how the referee is being swayed. And it's increasingly rare now where a referee sticks to his own decision.
Yeah.
And it's farcical now. I don't know why we go through the pantomime now of referees going in and having a look.
Yeah, just to slow it down a bit more. In case VAR isn't taking long enough.
They never change. As soon as VAR tell them, they go across, they pretend that they're considering it, and I don't know what goes through their mind. Sometimes it will be a help if they've missed it. They'll be grateful of it. But 99 times out of 100 now, the referees are going across, and we know the outcome is inevitable that they're going to go with VAR.
Yeah, because these are
an interesting concept in how much pressure is being applied by VAR, not just in La Liga, but everywhere. When you go across to that screen, we don't know what the meetings go on behind the scenes and stuff like that. But it's very rare now. You see a referee go, no, I'm sticking to my decision. I don't think that's a penalty.
Yeah, it's like they don't want to have a public disagreement and exactly. For one person to look at it and say, no, that really isn't. But then again, if they've had a meeting at some point, because they should be trying to benchmark what's a penalty and what isn't a penalty, what's a handball, what isn't a handball. I mean, if they're doing it, it's a mystery to the rest of us, but that's what they should be doing. Because the Sadiq one is very, very similar, isn't it, for Valencia, where, again, he's running into the penalty area and there is a collision. But I don't think he's not in control of the ball, so it's as much the attacker running into the defender. It is just a coming together. And but now, only in the penalty area, because that's only the only place VAR gets involved, you see people coming together all over the pitch.
Yeah.
Because you're running around. It's a contact sport still. But you're getting to the point where it's not a contact sport for defenders or goalkeepers in the penalty area.
Yeah. No, I guess, I mean, with Umar Sadiq, he does get touched with the ball, which is different to Budimir's.
Yeah.
He's in between the goalkeeper and the defender, Pau Navarro and Luis Junior. There is contact, but it's Sadiq who's, you could argue, is actually kicking the hand and the arm of the goalkeeper.
Mm.
But I just don't know the definition of the penalty in that scenario, which is very similar to the Courtois-Budimir penalty.
Yeah.
And it just appears that, I remember playing and doing it. If you knew that the goalkeeper was coming sliding out, you knew if he got there quick enough, without diving, he was committed, he would knock you over. You know, so it's really important to get that touch. Irrespective of if you knocked it 10 yards away and it was going out for a goal kick, if you got there first and the goalkeeper comes sliding out, and it just the law hasn't, the narrative hasn't changed. Forwards still think like that, but the definition of a foul is certainly favouring the attacking players now.
Yeah.
To the extent you've only got to get the touch and then you fall, and if there is any contact, Courtois treading on the foot, touching the top of the foot of Budimir. Sadiq going down because his boot has caught the arm of the goalkeeper. That's the standard now.
Yeah, and what VAR has done that they didn't sell us, VAR, they have changed how you play the game. You've got to play the game differently in games with VAR than games without VAR.
Yeah, and I mean, it's there to help, and it should be there to help. But it isn't. I mean, we had the Betis game, had 15 minutes added on. It's officially 14, but 15 minutes added on over discrepancies over in the box, outside the box. Was it a foul? Was it not a foul? And we're getting these delays to games.
I was watching at home yesterday. My wife wanted me to do something, and I said, I'll just do it at half time. And then she sort of, a minute, so she sits down and watches, and then like a minute later, she looks and says, hang on, it's like 54 minutes gone. You said half, and I said, "Yeah, this is still the first half." She said, "What? I thought it was 45 minutes." Yeah, it's supposed to be. 55 minutes. It's the 56th minute they blew for half time in that VAR.
I mean, even in the Premier League, wasn't there a problem? I haven't watched it. I'm never going to watch it. The referee and they can't officiate a game without the technology now.
This is genuinely pathetic. So the North London derby, big build-up, and it starts well. You know, good energy in the first few minutes, and then the assistant referee's earpiece headset isn't working, so they stop the game. And there's some young fella looking slightly baffled, trying to fix it. They're all standing there, and it goes on for minute after minute after minute. And you think he's got a flag in his hand?
Yeah,
he can wave the flag if he needs to.
Give him another one. Just to make sure that you don't miss him. So he's waving both flags at the same time. God forbid an assistant referee has to flag for an offside.
Yeah. He can just wave his flag. And if the ref doesn't see him instantly, we could all wait a few seconds. Or the assistant or the fourth official who's also mic'd up, he could say, that bloke is waving that flag that he's got in his hand for some reason. So it went on and by the time they kicked off again, the atmosphere was gone.
It's not getting any better, is it?
No.
The whole situation with VAR and technology, it's not getting better. It's not getting any better. How long has VAR been around now? I'm thinking 8-9 years?
2018 World Cup, wasn't it, I think? Didn't work as badly in that, so it came after that.
I can remember working for 11 Sports, I think, on VAR.
Yeah.
Which is about 7-8 years ago.
Yeah.
When it first came out, thinking, oh, this is interesting. Oh, he's offside. Yeah, but now I've got the replay and you can see it's just offside. And then, so it was a novelty at first. But now, as you said, the imprint on the game is far too great.
The problem is referees, I understand where it's come from. They are paranoid people because they get hammered so much. And so they are... The biggest thing, it's almost like the biggest thing in football is that the referees must not be embarrassed about making a bad decision. And that whole kind of, let's stop the North London derby for 5 minutes while this guy's headset gets sorted out. It's like, why? Because what? There might be a slight delay in communication between the officials. And you think that's more important than letting the game be played with all these people here and millions of people watching on TV and all this build-up and everything else. Oh, no, let's... You know, the ref isn't perfectly happy, you know, honestly. Talk about imperfect.
It's not him.
Yeah. So we do Real Madrid.
In the offsides, they're still debatable. And countless offsides I've seen recently where I know it's offside.
Yeah.
I might be working with a commentator who's getting excited because someone's through on goal, and I'm signalling.
Yeah, but as a commentator, you've got to finish the goal as a commentator, because what the last thing you want is to go, oh look, it's probably off there, blah blah, and then it's a goal, and your commentary is going nah 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 nah. So you have to, because of highlights and stuff, you have to finish the goal. You have to say goal, even though you know you think goal certainly is. But you don't want to kill the goal in the commentary.
But are these the ones, the offsides, where it doesn't result in a goal? And you know it's offside.
Yeah.
Someone comes across and makes a challenge, or the goalkeeper makes a save, or the shot is off target, and I'm busy going to the commentator, it's offside.
Yeah.
Wave from a flag. And then when you see the replay, you think, it's 2 yards offside, and the assistant referee's looking across, but he still hasn't got the guts to go, he's offside. Let's stop the game now.
Yeah.
Rather than
sometimes it
results in a corner.
Yeah, I heard a COCOM. It was on a Premier League game, and I was thinking, no, I'm annoyed. You're wrong, the COCOM, because he called out the assistant referee flagged, and I thought I thought he's offside. Well done, and he flagged, and then the COCOM said, oh, it was close. He probably shouldn't have flagged, and I was thinking, oh no, we can't have COCOMs doing that. Yeah, we can't have COCOMs saying, because he was right. The liner was right. Yeah. You can't have a go at them for being right.
And then chuck doubt in.
Yeah.
You're throwing the doubt in, aren't you? So then linesmen across the world are watching again. I need to always put my flag up, keep my flag down.
Yeah, and then
let VAR sort it out.
Yeah.
But sometimes it ends up in a corner.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, he was a yard or two offside.
You haven't
stopped the game. You've allowed the game to continue. It's continued long enough to be a corner, but you're not now going to go back and the assistant referee raises the flag and says, actually, he was offside. More often than not, they just leave it and you get a corner.
Oh, this is every Barcelona game. This is basically where you're not sure what you're watching anymore because you know there's like eight offsides or something, and some of them are given, some of them aren't given. They think, oh, in the end we'll go back and check it, but it never gets checked and the game goes on. Anyway, we're going to come back delightfully, everybody. Look forward to it. We're going to come back to an even worse bit of refereeing later in the game and later in the podcast. But let's talk. Let's break up the fascinating referee chat with some football. Osasuna 2, Real Madrid 1. Dodgy penalties aside, great result for Osasuna.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boost and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
No, not a disastrous result for Real Madrid, but they came up short.
Yeah, I predicted a draw in this one. I actually genuinely thought Osasuna a decent team. They're good at home. I love the passion. I like watching Osasuna games now in their own stadiums. They're real togetherness about the club. The rocky start, but they're under the new manager, but they're progressing well now. And when I look at them player for player, I'm thinking this should be the type of game that La Liga embraces, that it's not given that Real Madrid, or it could be Barcelona, it could be Atletico Madrid, they're going to Pamplona and they should roll over Osasuna. That's not the case. And it's not the case with a lot of games in La Liga. So I envisaged this would be a tough game for Real Madrid. So I will apply some criticism of Arbeloa, but I'm not going to come down that now and say that he isn't qualified for the job, which he isn't. But I'm not going to say that based on this performance. He didn't react well enough. His changes were a bit baffling. And there's a few things that are obvious blatantly when you look at it. This is a manager that's a novice, which he is. But in general terms, Osasuna away is a tough game. And it was always going to be a tough game, and it will be for Barcelona, it will be for Atletico Madrid, all the big teams, any team that goes Pamplona, you're in for a tough afternoon. They've got confidence now. As I say, their season is progressing nicely. They're going in the right direction. They were one of those teams that were in that relegation battle, but they're not now. And they're looking upwards and onwards and looking to European football. So they've got good players. They've signed well. And I knew this would be a tough game. So it's not, I would say Barcelona losing to Girona last week was a bigger shock than Real Madrid getting beat at Osasuna. I think the way Girona's season is going, that was a poor result from Barcelona's point of view. This is a poor result from Real Madrid's point of view, but it's not. It doesn't compare, in my opinion. So, and this would be a tough game, and it was a dramatic ending. And Osasuna played really well, and if they play really well, they're going to give Real Madrid a game.
Yes, sort of 90th minute winner, wasn't it? That was originally flagged for offside. So there we are. So there's, let's give VAR a bit, bit there.
But that's where it worked. But originally, when you see it, I'm not sure. Then you see the replay quick, you think, oh, he's onside. I was working at La Liga and there was a few of us rushed around the television. I was on the next game and you, everyone shout, goal, goal, goal. And you run out to see on the screen and unanimously we all went, it's going to be a goal. I was the only one speaking English and Cockney, but I got the understanding of all the others that were saying that goal is goal. And it was dramatic. They got to celebrate it twice, didn't they? They celebrated the first goal from the first time and Real Garcia, great finish. We did get a glimpse of the, hate to say it, but with Trent Alexander-Arnold playing superb last week. And the games he's played recently, I'm loving the crossfield passes. It's like Roberto Carlos back in the day. And it's going to be an asset and attribute to Real Madrid with him finding Vinicius on the other flank with those long diagonal passes. But his defending was woeful for the goal. And it's almost like he goes in the wrong completely direction as Real Garcia chops inside. I think he's chops inside Raul Asensio and Trent Alexander-Arnold is going in completely the wrong direction. And then Raul Garcia finishes it off. Arms go up. Real Madrid appealing for the offside. They think they're going to get away with it, but he was onside. It was a dramatic ending. So a really good game.
Yeah. Mbappe, goal-scoring drought, obviously. I don't know how long it is. people saying he's getting a bit of grief, saying he looks a bit tired. How do you balance that? Obviously, he's got to play. I mean, he's got Benfica coming up. You can't mess that up. How do you balance keeping him sharp and giving him time?
No, I think you keep playing him. The only issue, I don't think it's a question of tiredness. I think there is an issue regarding an injury that's been ongoing for a couple of months now, which for him must be a concern. He obviously wants to play the majority of games. It's why he didn't play against Real Sociedad last week. Remember, he missed the Spanish Super Cup, didn't he? That they flew him out to be on the bench for the final against Barcelona. There's a niggling injury there that's causing a problem. That's causing him a problem, not only for Real Madrid, but it's a World Cup. So when is it going to get addressed and sorted out? So at the moment, he's one of those players, and I'm sure there's many of them, that are, you know, sort of nursing their way through game after game after game. Your form can suffer when it gets like that, when you're not sure how much training you're doing and you're not sure how your knee is going to be feeling from one day to the next or after one game to the next. So I don't think it's tiredness. I think there has been an issue there with his knee and it's not going away. But he wasn't poor in this game. I mean, he scores a wonderful goal that's disallowed. He was offside. But he'll score goals. He's not an issue for Real Madrid. It's the same old problems that are not being addressed and they won't be addressed now. I don't see any difference with the midfield. I don't look at the substitutions that Arbeloa makes and look at it and think that's a wise manager. I just don't. Gonzalo Garcia comes on. He does score goals when he's playing up front, but he comes on and plays wide. I just look at the changes made and I'm thinking, why have he done that? You know, Gonzalo Garcia comes on. He has four touches in 20 minutes. And I'm not sure where he's playing. I'm not sure how the midfield is still lining up. Tchouaméni is the only one that plays in down the middle. Gula and Valverde sort of share the duties on the right. Camavinga drifts a bit to the left. You've still got Vinicius playing left wing. And you've got Mbappe up front. It's lacking balance still. And this is without Bellingham. I still think there's, as a young manager, Arbeloa, he's probably picking the big names and trying to fit them together as opposed to getting the proper balance in the team. So I think that the right-sided one is of the three, because Vinicius plays left wing. That's it. It's dressed up at the start of the game when you get the team sheets and the slates on the television coverage of two up front. And it's not. It's Mbappe up front, Vinicius on the left, but then you've got a left midfield player, you've got a left back in Carreras, but you've got no one on the right. No one wants to play. So you're looking at it and thinking that, you know, it's something that needs to be addressed. Gula plays there. Mastantuono plays there. Rodrigo can play there. But it might be something going forward if Vinicius is only going to play left wing. And it's not criticism of him. It's a criticism of this coach, the previous coach, and the coach before that of probably not coming up with a system that enables you to have a structure as a 4-3-3 is the obvious system for Real Madrid. If Vinicius plays there and Mbappe plays there, we need another player to play on the right. It means leaving out big name midfield players, but it's a very similar problem to what we've seen recently. No real makeup structure to a midfield of Real Madrid.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on. Shall we do Barcelona? So it was a home game for Barcelona, so all is good. They score at least three goals when they play at home and have done for months. And this was, comfortable, really, wasn't it, against Levante?
Without being they were far from fluent, though.
Yeah.
There were still issues there, I think, that will be concerning Hansi Flick. I mean, he came on, did the interviews before the game, and they asked him a good question, actually. Why Lewandowski in this game, or why Lewandowski in some games, why Ferran Torres in others? And he said he feels that Lewandowski, and I kind of assume this was the case, suits them better, Barcelona, when they're playing a team that will play lots of players back behind the ball. It does give them an aerial threat. And then, so if there's room in behind them, Ferran Torres is more suitable. So if that's the way they're doing, that's understandable. But my opinion, whichever one plays, I'm always thinking that one on the bench should come on. It's kind of, when you watch this game, Lewandowski wasn't at his best. There was a couple of chances he probably should have had. Rafinha takes a header off him in the six-yard box in the first half, and there was a couple of times that teammates could have passed to him and played him in, but he didn't really make an impact. So I think Pedri comes back, so that helps Barcelona. Marc Bernal is getting really close now to being a player they can count on and being fit and dependable and ready for action. But so it was, a lot of it was comfortable, but they still conceded the first chance of the game. Carlos Alvarez probably should have scored. There were other chances for Levante. And they, you know, I was looking at it, getting to the half-time break when it was still 1-0, and I'm thinking if Levante get to half-time and it's just the one goal, that would have been a success, the way that they were playing with 5-4 and one up front. But Frankie de Jong, playing well again, got the second goal. And then they couldn't get that third one to finish it off until shoot on sight, Fermin Lopez comes on and rattles in a wonderful goal. Mm. So there's things, they would have been pleased with a win. It takes them back to the top of the league. They lost to Atletico Madrid. They lost to Girona. So it was a stuttering performance, but kind opponents, I would say, for Barcelona. And looking at their home form, that's 12 wins out of 12. And it's the amount of goals they concede away from home. I think they conceded 20 away from home in La Liga, 5 at home. And when you look at the other results, they've only dropped points away. They've lost to Chelsea away in the Champions League. They've lost to Atletico away in the Champions League, in the Copa del Rey. So there are issues, and it's a bit of a dilemma why this system works at home but doesn't work away. And bearing in mind, this is their third home stadium. So it's not like they've had massive home advantage. They were playing in Montjuic. They played a couple of games at the training ground. Now they're playing at the Camp Nou, which looks different every time as a game there. Mm-hmm. Why are you conceding three times as many goals away as what you are at home playing the same system? So it was Cancelo was good.
Mm.
First half, outstanding in particular. They've got good reasons to look back on the result, but I think there's definitely room for improvement. There has to be improvement. I didn't think they were anywhere near their best, but still got the job done.
Yeah, they've got Villarreal next week. It's interesting to wonder, don't think we can answer, how much of an advantage they're getting by having these two midweeks off.
Oh, massive. That was part of being in the top eight. In the Champions League, in the top eight, it's overlooked actually how, you know, Real Madrid are going and going and going and going. Real Madrid are not in the Copa del Rey. Atleti are in the Copa del Rey and they're doing both as well.
Yeah, so it's Atleti the only ones who are doing
all three.
Yeah.
But Atleti, they're not because they're not in the league race.
Yeah.
That's the difference. Barcelona and Real Madrid are going for the title. Real Madrid have got the extra Champions League games. Barcelona haven't. So there is a benefit, definitely a benefit.
Just briefly on Levante, you were baffled midweek when he made a load of changes, and he made a load of changes again.
I was baffled, and I had to stop myself yesterday before the game, get the teams, and I'm counting the changes. It was 6 yesterday. It was 7 the game before, and then you start going further back, and then by the time the kickoff came, I'm thinking, is he playing today or is he not playing today? Oh, where's he gone? He's disappeared completely. So I had to kind of cut it off there. There's only one outfield player that's played the last three, started the last three games.
Yeah.
Matt Ryan has played all three games in goal. And it's Adrian Della has played all three games. No other outfield player has started all three games in a week. If you're making 13 changes in 2 starting lineups, that's 13 out of 22 changes you're making. Now, I'm not sure Levante got that many good players.
Mm.
And I'm pretty sure, knowing how players feel, that they're looking at it now and thinking, he don't know what he's doing.
Mm.
But they have 4 or 5 games coming up against opposition, which will define their season.
Yeah, they've got 4 6-pointers in a row and probably 6 out of 7. You would say are six pointers now. So this is it. This is their season coming up, isn't it?
Exactly. And Carlos Alvarez mentioned it straight away after the game. So they didn't throw away that game yesterday.
Yeah.
I don't know what they were doing against Villarreal. I don't know what they were doing against Valencia and Athletic Club in recent games as well. But now this season, and he's been doing okay. So I don't want to be too critical of him, but I'm struggling to understand how. I mean, there was a player the other night that I hadn't seen before that signed in the transfer.
Do you think literally just resting, just thinking, we're just going to take almost a 2 week pause and rest everybody, rotate the whole squad, treat it like almost a mini pre-season.
Yeah. And that's the only conclusion to take from it. There was a player that played against Villarreal. I'm having to work at the games there, against Villarreal called Hugo Regubert. He's 22-year-old. He's joined on loan from Lille in the transfer window. He played, and I'm thinking, God, he looks good. What a good signing. The manager knows him because the manager was managing in France, and Dunkirk and Nantes, and he knows him. So the conclusion is easy to make. He likes the player. He's got the club to bring him in on loan. He played really well the other night. And then he's on the bench and you think, he looks really good as well. Hasn't lost confidence because he's not been playing for a team that's been getting beaten. And there he was. Didn't even come off the bench yesterday. So it's hard to make that conclusion. As I say, I think he's doing all right in terms of results. They're losing.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Teams you probably expect them to lose to. But those big games coming up. It's just, I did say to you, I think the manager's lost his mind. Just picking the names out of a hat and apart from two of them.
Atletico Madrid, as we say, involved in the Champions League on tomorrow night, Tuesday night. So this was a good win against Espanyol. Sorloth at his powerful best. And this was the game I was thinking of, this and the Oviedo game. Crossing the ball into the box, Terry. It works sometimes.
Well, do you know Sorloth is, I mean, it's a dilemma because Griezmann played really well.
Mm.
And now Julian Alvarez is showing signs of getting back to his form. And I do still think that a big game at this moment in time, Simeone will pick Julian Alvarez. And it's hard to disagree. But then Griezmann is playing well. So do you play Griezmann and Julian Alvarez? Do you find the place for Sorloth? Now, Sorloth is one of these very much like Haaland, where he's not always involved in the game. And at times he can be pedestrian. But if you give him the service, and there's two ways of giving him the service. One is the obvious one, crosses into the box. And he's a craftsman. When the ball goes wide, he's jogging along, looks like he's not really interested. And then he comes alive. His movement is good. And he always tries to get in the right positions. Ruggeri found him brilliantly for one of the goals. The other option is, if there's space in behind, for a big bloke, he can run as well.
Yeah.
So it's sort of two options there from Sorloth. I'm really fascinated to see how defenders are going to deal with him and Erling Haaland together in the World Cup.
And how they play. How do you get them both? Are you slinging crosses in? How deep do you defend against them?
Well, that's the problem. If you, in general terms, if you're playing against a big striker that's good in the air, they're not normally quick. So you defend high.
Mm.
You defend high up the pitch. You try and keep them out of the box. You play the higher defensive line because anything in behind against the big 6'4" centre forward who's not particularly quick, you can deal with that. You can run in behind. You can beat him to it. But with those two, they both can run. So you can't just defend high because Haaland and Sorloth are running behind. You can't defend deep because if you allow crosses into the box, they could destroy you. So, it's a mixture of both. But, I Sorloth is, I'm a big admirer. I'm interested to see what his attitude is going to be for at the end of the season. I can see a problem there, to be honest, because he should be, in most other teams, a recognised main man, designated number one striker. But this week against Brugge.
Here we go again.
That's the outtakes. Against Brugge, I think he'd be on the bench.
Yeah.
Because yeah. Griezmann's playing well. Alvarez plays well. And yeah, it'd be interesting. My prediction is sort of might be on the bench, but Simeone's got to be under pressure playing. I mean, he gets service from Giuliano Simeone as well. That's Ruggeri on the left side. Ruggeri on the left side is capable of getting crosses in. Lookman was quite quiet. It was just Johnny Cardoso looked. That was his best game, I think, for Atletico Madrid. And it's needed because we knew he was a good player from Betis, been injured, had some injury issues. And at the weekend, he looked like a genuine bona fide Atletico Madrid midfield player. Yeah. Good on the ball, tenacious, winning it back, covered the ground. So that's good news for Atletico Madrid. But yeah, they were good at the weekend, but they conceded the first goal. So you're not sure, thinking, oh, is this what this year we're going to be seeing today?
Yeah.
They actually ended up really good. And it's some big problems for Espanyol.
Yeah, yeah. So 2 points this year, which is...
We've seen who they've got next week, Elche.
Yeah.
Neither have won this year.
Yeah.
Just need Spurs in that little trio there, don't they? Teams that haven't won a game in 2026. Sorry, I keep mentioning it's a thorn in my side. It's a sore point today. But Elche haven't won a game. Espanyol haven't won a game. Are we predicting a draw?
Probably, yeah.
It's at Elche.
Yeah.
I would make Elche slight favourites.
Mm.
But it's, yeah, so it's a problem for Espanyol. I mean, I played for... it's ancient history, but I was at Coventry and we got to fourth place at Christmas and a massive surprise. We then went 15 games without a win, picked up very few points and ended up having to draw our last game of the season to survive. And I look at Espanyol's points total and I'm thinking, they've got the points on the board, 35.
Yeah.
Yep, we were probably thinking the same at the time. Oh, we'll be okay. We'll be okay. Now we haven't won a game. We've got a draw. We've got beat. Panic starts to set in. I'm not predicting Espanyol get relegated, but they're not going to finish in the European spot now.
No. 2 points from 8 games, isn't it? And they're 11 points clear. I think you're right. Be interesting to see how they turn it around, if they turn it around. Villarreal got a win against Valencia. So we've already talked about the penalty.
Yep.
That was, I don't know, well, there are two penalties, aren't there? Because there's also a penalty for a handball, isn't there?
Yeah, Ramazzani, I think it was. I thought he hit the shoulder on the other arm, but it brushed past that and caught the arm that was slightly out.
He's a bit unlucky because I think he's actually... I don't think we saw the perfect... He's trying to withdraw his hand. It's almost behind where he was standing.
Yes.
Because he twists as he... And he leaves his hand flailing behind.
He's kind of turning his back, isn't he? That's the problem.
Well, just put my hand up.
Whereas if he'd stood and took it in the chest.
Yeah.
But he turns his back on the cross.
Yeah.
It's not a cross. I think he's guilty of being scared. What? Yeah, turning his back on it.
Yeah.
And his arm went to the side and it does strike the arm.
Yeah, yeah. But in general performance, though, from Villarreal Valencia?
Valencia, they've been better lately. Mm. But it's another defeat, so they're still in deep trouble. And Villarreal, they're motivated now to finish third. You can see. You know, they're clear in terms of finishing in the top four. That shouldn't be an issue. But I think they're motivated to finish above Atletico now.
Yeah, yeah. So therefore, this weekend was a setback for Betis, wasn't it? Who have been, you know, really reining them all in, haven't they? So they'd won 1-2-3 in a row, and then they draw this weekend at home to Rayo. So because you sort of say the top four done. I think Betis would argue that, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
And at the moment, Spain is not getting that fifth place in Europe. It could change if they do well from here, the clubs in Europe. But at the moment, they're not getting that fifth place. So it really matters, finishing top four.
Yeah, no, Betis. I mean, Betis, if they'd have won, they'd have got level or point behind Atleti before the game starts. They played before Atleti on the Saturday, so if they would have gone to 44 points. Atleti won 45. So they've closed the gap. Rayo are not bad, but it's been a weird old season for them because of the stadium, the training ground, European football. On their day, they're not bad. They're difficult opponents, but it's a game I expected Betis to win. But Rayo played well. So, it's not the biggest surprise. If Rayo are showing signs of being back to form, based on that, getting confidence from the win against Atletico the week before, then, yeah, it's not the biggest surprise in the world that Rayo get a draw away from home against Betis.
Yeah, yeah. Real Sociedad, we've been getting lots of praise recently. They have conceded 7 goals in the last 2 games, however. So this, basically, nothing happens in the first half. And then Oviedo, who hadn't scored many goals, scored 2 corners right at the start of the second half, both Viñas.
Under the previous manager, he's playing on the wing all the time and getting sent off all the time. But you could say there was a player there. And now he's playing up front. They're playing Solomon Rondon up front, and he was playing wide. But every time I saw him, I thought, no, play him. Try and get him in the middle. He's the centre forward.
Yeah.
One of the goals, I'm not sure, Ramiro, he literally threw it at him, didn't he?
He went for this weird, like, punch up in the air thing, didn't he? Saved and he sort of punches it high. It goes really high up in the air, doesn't it? And then Viñas, he jumps really well, doesn't he? It's a great leap, and he scores from it. But like you said, yeah, it should never have been a chance.
No, exactly. So that was a surprise from Ramiro. And a surprise that Oviedo go 2 goals up. A surprise that Oviedo score 2 goals and then go 2 goals up. And even more of a surprise was Oskarsson come to life. So he scores a thumping header, doesn't he? Another really good header. Then it's 2-2. Then it's 3-2. And you think, how have Oviedo, typical of a team at the bottom of the league, that get themselves in a winning position, 2-0 up away from home against a team that are playing really well. But they showed spirit. And as you said, Eric Bailly gets the last-minute equaliser to make it 3-0. So it was a cracking game of football.
Yeah, although it wasn't quite last minute, was it? Because Geddes hit the post after that, didn't they? So it could have been 4-3.
The goal was a scramble. If you're an Oviedo manager and you're Guillermo Almada and you're looking at it and thinking, you forget the goals you've scored, but Real Sociedad could have done better. But as the Oviedo manager, you're looking at, we score 3 goals away from home, but look at our defending. Oskarsson's no one near him for the header.
Yeah.
There's literally no one. It's a good cross and a good header, and a powerful header, but there's no defenders in sight. And then the other goals you're looking at, we could have done better on that one. We could have done better on that one. So, yeah, that's why they're bottom of the league. Love their spirit. Love the fact they're scoring goals. They've got it's a long shot, but they are playing much better now.
Yeah, yeah. Everything's a relegation battle, basically, as we say every week, but it remains true. Getafe 0, Sevilla 1. Right, so we'll have to finish up what happened with Almeida, because we talked about it a lot last week. But the game, in a massive moment in the game, was the red card for Gené, wasn't it? 25 minutes in. Tell me if I'm wrong, it just looked like he was late into a challenge.
Yeah, and I don't see any evidence of studs up. He's not extending his leg and smashing into the player. It's a genuine attempt to win the ball. He's a fraction of a second late. I think a yellow card.
Yeah, and it would be painful.
I've even seen referee just go, look, calm it down. But the ref went bang.
Yeah.
Straight away, the red card. And Vard didn't have the nerve to turn it over. That was a ridiculous decision, in my opinion. And it's so it even the game. I mean, Getafe, they're playing well, they're winning games. But to be down for that period of time, 65 minutes plus added on time, was too much for them in the end. Good goal from Sevilla, so does well. It's a lovely build-up. Layoff from Aiko Adams was really good. It was a competitive game. But Sevilla did have an advantage with something almost dramatic happening with Sevilla games, isn't there? Players being sent off, managers being sent off. In this case, it was Gené with a... I can't believe that wasn't overturned, to be honest, when I saw the challenge.
Yeah, but going back to your previous point, there is this kind of social pressure among the referee community not to overturn stuff,
Yeah.
I think, isn't there? I think.
When I heard Ibsgene sent off, here we go, because I was working on the next game, so I was doing keeping an eye on that one. I was envisaging seeing a horrendous tackle. I mean, he does love a tackle. He loves a challenge. He's normally a clean player. He's just aggressive and competitive. When I saw it was a straight red, I thought, that must have been a bad one after 25 minutes to be a straight red. And when I saw it, I thought, is that it?
No, it would hurt, wouldn't it? It catches him. It does catch him on top of the foot. And you go, ow, thanks, mate. But yellow card, bang. And that's it, done. You would have thought. Anyway, we're old men, Terry. Almeida got a 7-match ban. Is that right? Is that fair? It could have been 10.
Probably. I wonder if they took into context his original crime wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
In fact, he then got sent off for not a lot. They then argued it was the argument after the red cards, wasn't it, or the yellows they gave him. But he didn't deserve the initial treatment from the referee for his outburst on the side of the pitch. So maybe that went in his favour that it was unjust to start with, but you did take it too far. So 7 out of 10 is I think it's just about right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you missed it last week, he basically stood there shouting in the referee's face, refusing to leave, hands behind his back. So he's like making out somehow he's not being aggressive. But then he just goes on and on and on. It's over a minute, the whole thing, where he's just...
And people were pulling him away and he was getting aggressive with them. It was passive-aggressive with the referee, but aggressive with other people that were trying to drag him away from the situation. And I thought that was going to spin into a dust-up.
Yeah.
But he didn't do much wrong to start with. So what his argument was, what have I done? What have I done? And he kept repeating that.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
It's a reasonable point that he makes, but he made it totally outrageously.
Yeah.
A reasonable point is, because you've said this many times, this whole kind of running over and just waving a red or a yellow in the general direction of the bench. And what he was basically saying is, don't do this unless you're certain that someone has said something significant. I think that's a reasonable point. Don't just get into, or someone on the bench said something, let's go and send someone off. Looks like they do.
Exactly.
So I get his point, but then he stood there shouting the referee. He's like, you're accusing me of being outrageous and aggressive. Now you are.
Hey, the referee looked scared at one stage.
Yeah, well, he's outrageous.
Almeida had lost it.
Yeah, yeah.
Anything could have happened.
Yeah.
So I get why there was a call for a big ban. I think it's just about right, 7. It's about half the game's left.
Yeah.
Which is a problem for Sevilla.
Yeah, yeah. Although they won. But they've got a big stroke of luck. Referees, help them out. We've got 2 more games to go. Do you want the one with the really dodgy penalty or the one with a really dodgy penalty?
One with a dodgy penalty where it was the only dodgy penalty. Aspas penalty. Let's do Celta first.
Okay. Right.
And we'll finish on the really dodgy penalty.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So Aspas gets 2 late goals. I mean, to be fair to Celta Vigo, they had 20 shots to 1.
Yeah.
In this game, so I'm not sort of dripping with sympathy for Mallorca, but it's a terrible penalty decision. Well, a baffling one.
Yeah, and when I see the replay, I'm thinking, is it for that player on attempt that challenge, or is it that challenge? There's 2 different Mallorca defenders, 2 different Celta attackers, and I'm struggling to find which one it could be. So how is that a penalty? I don't know. I think it's given eventually against, it's in favour of Borja Iglesias.
Obviously.
But there's a slight touch, a slight pull for a split, not even a second, there's a slight. So when it was given, again, I'm thinking, that's not him. That I can't see that being a penalty, and it was given. And it was important. It broke the deadlock. It then allows Aspas to finish off the game with in style with the second goal. He's really come into form. He was good in the Europa League game in midweek.
Promising young lad, isn't he?
And he's back again. Celta had a little wobble in La Liga, but this was a comprehensive victory. Almost looks like a proper football stadium now, doesn't it? Every time they play at home, again, like Barcelona Camp Nou, you're looking at it, and there's another bit gone up behind the goal. There's concrete structure, and you can see the frame of the goal there, a frame of the stand behind the goal. It's going to be really atmospheric when that's fully finished. So I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be similar to Osasuna, their stadium, which is atmospheric now because of the rebuild, one or two others around the La Liga as well. So, yeah, I'm looking...
As Henry, one of our Patreons' experience showed, let's hope that the roof actually covers all of the spectators when they've finished the work.
Well, I did notice the Levante players went across to thank their supporters at the end of the game at the Camp Nou, and they were still stuck up in the top of the corner with a big plastic shield around them.
Yeah.
Is there a need for that? Do we have that in the Premier League? No. In the UK? We don't have plastic shields around.
No, certainly don't.
No, I don't know. In this new ultra-modern stadium,
why
supporters have got to have a plastic shield around them.
It's wrong. And also, it's probably already greasy and dirty. So they can't money, can't see the game.
Well, we saw the Betis one, didn't we? Took his window cleaning.
Yeah.
Betis at Sevilla.
Yeah.
One of the Betis fans must have been a window cleaner. He took his kit in and was doing the squeegee on the plastic stuff. And people clapping him because it meant they could see the game through this perspex. So I was surprised when I saw that at the weekend. I thought, there's better ways to manage away fans than sticking them behind a big plastic shield.
There has to be. Remaining game, Athletic 2, Elche 1. Guruzeta got a couple of goals. Elche got a... Actually, the penalty I don't mind this weekend is the Elche penalty in this one. It's a late challenge. Is it Lecque?
And Herman Valera.
Yeah, so he goes sort of trying to block across. He's late. He catches the player. So that's fine. Don't mind that.
Well, when it happened, I didn't think it was.
Yeah.
Nobody did. It was one of those where he crossed it, got cleared, corner.
Yeah.
And then when it comes up, there's a penalty check, you look and you think, oh, that's nailed on a penalty. It's anywhere else on the pitch, late challenge. He crosses the ball, so it goes in the box, it's cleared. But there is a late challenge from Lecque, and that would have been, it's a foul anywhere else on the pitch. So I commend the referees for giving that one.
Yeah. But then the other one, it's another baffling one. Julian sent us a message. He said, that penalty for Athletic, oh my, utterly farcical. How did the officials get themselves into such a mess? Man falls over as other man in perfectly normal position clears ball.
Would be thought. Yeah. Exactly. And again, when it was the penalty check, I'm thinking, well, what for? Mm. And you could be looking, because it was a set piece, recirculated, put back into the box. You're looking at pulls of shirts and stuff like that. Not the initial thing where, the Bihas has kicked it clear as Laporte throws himself a brave header, but it's knee high, not even that, isn't it?
Yeah, and he sort of slips, doesn't he? So he ends up much lower than he wanted to be, I think. I don't think he wanted to dive that low.
And you're thinking, that can't be a penalty. Literally, I can't see how that can be allowed to be a penalty.
It's one of these ones where you think, why isn't it a foul the other way?
Yeah.
Because Bihas is playing the ball and Laporte comes sort of stumbling and falling and diving and catches him. And he said, what's a foul then?
And it was given. And this was, 89th minute?
Yeah.
Against a team that's struggling. Sarabia and Esteban Valverde were going at it hammer and tongs at the end of the game as well. So frustration spilling over in those circumstances for the Elche manager. As we said earlier, Elche haven't won a game this year, then they think they've got a decent point away from home against Athletic Club, and the referee gives it to them. I'm glad for Guruzeta, I have to be honest. We've all criticised the fact that Athletic haven't got a striker, and the last few months I've been defending him, saying they have. Mm. He needs to play every game. He needs to be made as if he's the main centre-forward at Athletic Club, rather than, well, this week we're going to play Necky up front. Sanadi's been injured most of the season. They played Unai Gomez up front. They played Sanchez up front. But it does look like a player now who realises that Valverde trusts him and he's repaying it. Excellent first goal. I was slightly surprised he was taking the penalty, but he tucked it away nicely. But it was never a penalty. Not in a million years was that a penalty.
Yeah, yeah. Right, so tonight it's Alaves. In fact, Alaves play the next two games in La Liga because they play Monday and Friday. So
Alaves, they're lucky in Alaves because up in Vitoria it's about 90 degrees at the moment. So we'll have a couple of drinks breaks during the match. That's the reason they're playing it at night in Alaves, because the heat is so hot during the daytime. This is just for the information for Theo Walcott. That everywhere, the entire Spanish country is dripping in sunshine, bathed in sunshine throughout. I put massive amounts of sunscreen on the weekend. Actually, it was quite nice at the weekend.
It was actually sunny this weekend, wasn't it?
The first weekend that's been nice for 3 or 4 months. And trust me, Madrid gets chilly. Vitoria, Alaves, where they are, it gets freezing. Osasuna, Pamplona, wouldn't have been... There was no need for a drinks break the other night. The Basque region, we've seen San Sebastian. So that nonsense that Theo Walker, I apologise on behalf of all English pundits everywhere that are just daft. He would have Real Madrid challenging Brentford, Bournemouth and Brighton for top eight, and they've struggled to beat Crystal Palace and Leeds away because of the weather. How have all these Spanish players that have come over to the Premier League coped? Bless them. David Silva come from Las Palmas. I know he's playing for Valencia, but he's from the Canary Islands, John. How did he survive in Manchester? It's baffling, how they've managed to cope. What a load of nonsense that was. I mean, the right answer to that question was, how would Real Madrid do in the Premier League? They'd be contenders.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be the right answer to say, they'd win it. They're contenders. It's simple as that. To say that eighth.
Yeah, it was just weird, wasn't it? It's actually a weird thing to say. I don't even know what he's thinking. They, in knockout tie, I think it's 11 of the last 14 against English clubs that Real Madrid have won. I mean, they got well beaten. They were second best to Arsenal last season, weren't they? Like you say, you'd be silly to say, they'd walk the league. That would be silly. But
exactly.
Their record is really good, and that's against the top four,
yes.
Remember? I'm not going to be silly and disrespectful. So, there are some good teams in the Premier League. They've got, the teams down are able to spend a lot of money, and there are some good teams. But it's just a weird answer, isn't it, to say they'd finish eighth?
Yeah, it was. Do you know what, though? It's damaging in the fact that how can we trust anything he says in the future? If he genuinely thinks Real Madrid would finish eighth in the Premier League and would struggle away from home against teams because of the weather.
Mm-hmm.
Bellingham's English, Tchouaméni and Camavinga are French. They don't play. They've not played all their lives in boiling hot weather. It was just ludicrous. It was clickbait. I don't know whether he was clever enough to do that. I just think he generally believes that.
Just seemed to give no thought at all to an answer. I don't know.
No.
Yeah, unless he just, I don't know. Who knows? Who knows? There we are. We'll get him on the show one day, Terry. I think it might cost a bit too much for us.
No, we won't. I won't bother. You can have him on your own, John, but I won't. I'll go somewhere warm.
Yeah. right, so a couple of Champions League games. They've got the Alaves-Girona game, so we'll be reflecting on that with Patreons at some point in this week, and we'll see you all for another... In fact, it'll have to be Tuesday, because Real Madrid have a Monday night game next week, Terry, so we'll have to be just over a week, and we'll see you for a regular podcast then. We'll see you all then. Bye-bye.
guys. It is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better. With new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect, the fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.